Good evening. In tonight's programme, a £71,000 wager snatch at a Sheffield engineering factory. The post office chairman comes to Sheffield and says the cost of posting a letter is to go up in the new year. Penistone could be set to lose its direct rail link to Sheffield, and we spin some of that old black magic as we approach the Witches' Night of the year. First, though, the news roundup, Jim Greensmith.
The government has rejected a recommendation that it should close down the notorious Dartmoor prison. The recommendation comes from the Committee of Inquiry into the Prison Service, headed by a judge. Their report, published today, says conditions in the jail are against nature. The prison was originally built on a bleak site in the middle of Dartmoor, especially to house the toughest Victorian convicts. However, Home Secretary William Whitelaw told the Commons this afternoon that with the present overcrowding in British jails, he had no intention of closing down Dartmoor. The report also says money must be spent urgently to improve conditions in some other British jails, and Shadow Home Secretary Merlin Rees urged the government to accept this recommendation if it wants to avoid a spate of prison riots.
All of us had better accept one thing. Much of what this report talks about will not be put right without public expenditure, and I hope that something has got to be done about this, otherwise we shall be faced with industrial action and riots in prisons that none of us would want to see in the future.
A DC-10 airliner has crashed while landing at Mexico City in heavy fog. At least 80 people are believed to have died, but there were some survivors in the rear section of the aircraft. The crash comes 5 months after an American airline DC-10 crashed at Chicago, killing 273 people and sparking off a worldwide scare about the general safety of the plane. All DC-10s in operation in the States were grounded and foreign-owned models banned from flying there for 2 months, while an inquiry was held. The results of that inquiry showed that, properly maintained, the DC-10 is a safe aircraft. After today's crash, first reports stated that trouble began after the DC-10 landed at Mexico City. But as John Virtue reports, it now appears the aircraft was in flames before it landed and careered into airport buildings.
Some of the survivors say that there were flames aboard the plane before it crashed, and that the pilot tried to bring the wings, hit a service vehicle on the airstrip. The plane spun around about 180 degrees and broke up into three. The front part of the plane went into a building. The middle part was almost completely destroyed. And the tail end, where there were survivors, ended up a considerable distance from the other two-thirds of the plane.
A 13-year-old boy has been cleared of causing the death of a Sheffield girl who was hit by a television set which dropped from a balcony at Sheffield's Hyde Park Flats. Here's David Roby.
The boy had denied the manslaughter of 8-year-old Lisa Dean, who died in April. Mr. Justice Waterhouse ordered him to be cleared after hearing legal submissions in the jury's absence. Henry Sharrock, the flat caretaker, told the court that debris was often hurled over the balconies, and since Lisa's death, other people have been injured by flying objects. He told Mr. Anthony Briggs, who was prosecuting, that at least once a week a large piece of furniture is thrown down. His list included a washing machine and an iron bedstead. Mr. Sharrock said notices warning that people could be prosecuted for throwing furniture were having no effect, and since the accident, areas had been coloured in red and yellow as danger warnings.
Detectives hunting for the Yorkshire Ripper, who's so far killed and mutilated 12 women, now believe he may have moved south from his hunting ground in Yorkshire and Lancashire. Police are basing their theory on 3 telephone calls made to different people at Kettering in Northamptonshire, the hometown of the last Ripper victim, 19-year-old Barbara Leach, who was attacked and killed in Bradford, where she was a student. Among the 3 people who received a call was a police telephone exchange operator. The officer organising the hunt in the south, Detective Chief Superintendent Arthur Crawley, says he thinks the calls could be genuine.
These calls were received by 3 different people, but each of them have heard, since heard, the recording of the Ripper's voice, and they say that it appears to be the same. There was a possibility that, you know, it's getting a bit too hot for him up north, and that he might change his location.
There's been a serious fire at Sanderson Kayser Engineering Works on Newall Road at Darnell in Sheffield. 4 oil tankers were ablaze and 9 fire tenders were used to put out the flames. Elaine Lipworth asked leading fireman Dave Morris how much damage was caused.
You can't tell how bad the damage is until the fire's actually out and everything's assessed.
But was it quite a serious fire?
Reasonably serious, yeah.
How many appliances were sent out? What sort of equipment?
There were six pumping appliances, the foam tender and the platform.
Special equipment was needed for the oil, was it?
It was requested but wasn't needed.
Have you any idea how it started?
It's impossible to say how it started at this moment, but the officer in charge will eventually find out himself. The officer in charge will be investigating it.
The miners say the National Coal Board's latest pay offer is unacceptable, but they'll be meeting for more talks next week. The miners were demanding an immediate change in their wage settlement date from March to November. The board have offered to go to November in two stages over the next 2 years. They've also told the union that there's £140 million in the kitty for wage rises in the coming year, which would mean rises ranging between 9 and 15%. The left-wing leader of the Yorkshire miners, Arthur Scargill, described the offer as ridiculous. Union President Joe Gormley says it's a start. An open verdict has been recorded at the inquest in London into the death of the former lead guitarist with the pop group Wings, Jimmy McCulloch. From the Westminster Inquest, Nick Peters.
Mystery still surrounds the death of 26-year-old McCulloch, who was found by his brother John in what the Westminster Deputy Coroner, Dr. Paul Knapman, described as odd circumstances. He was going through a very successful stage in his new solo career and was not at all depressed, so suicide is doubtful, said Dr. Knapman. But at the same time, the neat and tidy condition of his flat when he was found tends to rule out foul play. Dr. Knapman suggested that perhaps the flat was too tidy, as if someone had cleaned up while McCulloch, who was not a drug addict, lay dying or dead. His brother John is convinced there was a third party there, and is determined to find out who it was. The coroner said that an open verdict was the only one possible, and regretted that the death of pop stars from drug overdose was a mode of death for those in the pop music industry that was seen far too commonly in his court.
Police in Sheffield are warning motorists of a road diversion tonight. It'll affect traffic coming into the city on Penistone Road. From 8 o'clock tonight till 6 tomorrow, cars will be diverted from Hillfoot Bridge along Neepsend Lane and Rutland Road back onto Penistone Road. Traffic in the opposite direction won't be affected. The diversion's due to roadworks. Finally, a 13-year-old choir boy from Bath Abbey has become Britain's new chorister of the year. Beating off competition from hundreds of boy soprano aspirants from all over the country, Simon Minns hit just the right note to win the Abbey and himself £1,500 worth of audio equipment. Simon's been telling us what originally sparked his interest in church music.
Well, the Queen came to the Abbey, and I wanted to sing for the Queen. And when I'd heard she was coming to the Abbey, I wanted to join the choir. But unfortunately, when I joined the choir, she had been before, and that's why I missed her. But that's what the reason why I joined the choir, because I wanted to sing for the Queen.
So you're holding out hope that she may come a second time?
Yes.
22 minutes to 6 after the break, a security guard ends up in hospital after a big wages snatch in Sheffield, and postal charges are to go up in the new year.
Attention! All those interested in receiving free recipe leaflets of delicious, satisfying egg meals. Pencils and paper at the ready. Write to me, Sergeant Major Egg, Panton Street, that's Panton Street, London, W1, pencils, Eddies. You enclose a stamp, and I'll send you the free recipe leaflets by return to help you crack a meal today.
What I'd really like is some G-Plan furniture.
We'll go down to Ponsford's.
Oh, but that's an expensive shop.
Not true. Ponsford's just look expensive because they sell good furniture. And because they're Sheffield's main G-Plan stockist, you can get quick delivery on almost every item.
And you're quite sure it isn't more expensive?
Positive. Their prices are very keen. You go down to Ponsford's on London Road and see. Parking's easy, the staff are friendly and helpful, they offer free credit facilities and stay open late every Friday. I'm certainly going back to Ponsford's again.
21 minutes to 6, a £71,000 wages snatch in Sheffield today. A Securicorps van was ambushed as it arrived at a Stanley tool factory. Three men were involved in the raid. Two of them attacked a guard and grabbed the money, while the third man stayed at the wheel of their getaway car. Jim Greensmith has the details.
The security guard has now been released from hospital after treatment for a shoulder injury and burns after the raiders attacked him. The Securicorps van had just arrived in the compound at Stanley Tools Woodside Laneworks. The three raiders had got inside the company compound and were lying in wait. Detective Chief Superintendent Rod Jones describes what happened.
They removed his goggles before spraying an irritant liquid into his face and snatched the container containing £71,000 in cash. He was pushed to the floor and it's believed he suffered a fractured shoulder.
So there was obviously a fight involved?
Well, there was certainly a struggle involved, yes. The two attackers then drove off in a dark green or blue-coloured Triumph 1300 saloon motor car.
The registration number of that car is May96F, M-A-Y-96F. It was found abandoned in a car park at the junction of Brunswick Road and St Andrews Street.
We're anxious to trace anyone who saw this vehicle in the vicinity of Stanley Tools between 8.15 and 9 a.m. this morning, or either of the two following described men who were responsible for the attack on the security man. The descriptions are 35 years, 5 foot 8 to 10, stocky build, dark features, neck length dark straggly hair, wearing dark blue nylon overalls, a black and yellow striped scarf round the lower part of the face, and brown boots. And the second man is 28 to 30 years, 5 foot 8, black wavy collar length hair, wearing a three-quarter parka-type coat, dark green trousers.
I suggested to Chief Superintendent Jones that it would appear to have been a pretty well-planned raid.
It would appear to have all the appearance of that at this stage, yes.
And presumably at this stage there's still a fairly widespread police search going on.
We are actively continuing our inquiries into the matter.
Do you have any idea of perhaps another vehicle that may have been used as a second getaway car?
Well, that's a possibility that we're exploring at this stage.
It was a case of first the good news, then the bad, when Post Office Chairman Sir William Barlow visited Sheffield today. The good news came when he posted the 400 millionth letter to go through Sheffield's new postal sorting system and said that this is one of the best areas in the country for postal efficiency. Well, the bad news was quick to follow. The cost of posting a letter or a parcel will be going up in the new year. David Roby reports.
Sir William's surprise announcement came during a special ceremony marking the 400 millionth letter to be posted through Sheffield's new mechanised sorting system. He told me there's no question of postal charges remaining stable for much longer.
The last price rise was delayed because by the last government because of the election, and then it was only a penny, and that was done on the assumption of 5% wage increases. We've recently had to go along with the general rate of 15% wage increases. The present government is insisting on the cash limit. And therefore there's no doubt at all that at the beginning of next year we shall have to increase postal prices.
Any idea at this stage to how much?
Well, I don't want to be drawn today because the matter's in the last stages of discussion with the government.
The new system in Sheffield was one of the first in the country, and Sir William said this sort of technology will increase efficiency and help to keep down costs. But he said prices will continue to go up because the post office is a labour-intensive industry.
Well, we want to do everything we can to keep costs down. The trouble with the postal business is that it's a labour-intensive business. 85% of our expenditure is in wages. So that as soon as we make wage increases, it comes straight through in the cost and therefore in the price. Now, anything we can do to make our usage of labour highly efficient is in the interest of the customer. We are currently embarking on a big programme of spring cleaning all our postal business operations to see just how we can take out cost. But at the end of the day, it will always be a labour industry, and we need postmen and postal operators in general to handle the letters. There's no way there can be we can mechanise right through to the letterbox at somebody's house.
Going back to Sir William's original reason for coming to Sheffield, the 400 millionth letter that he posted was addressed to the Lord Mayor of Sheffield, telling him just how much had been achieved with the new machinery at the Sheffield sorting office. And he told me just how significant the event was.
We thought it would be nice to mark this milestone with a letter to the Lord Mayor. Sheffield has been in the forefront of the letter mechanisation programme, and the machines that we've had here have been operating regularly and consistently since 1972. Now, of course, letter mechanisation is being extended all over the country, but Sheffield was one of the pioneers, and it's been an enormous success. And this is why it's absolutely essential that members of the public do please put the postcode on their letters. Because here in this office in Sheffield, we actually sort the letters down to the postman's walk using the postcode.
Post Office Chairman Sir William Barlow, and that report by David Roby. It's just coming up to 6:15. There's been a warning today that people living in Penistone could lose their Sheffield train links altogether if they oppose a plan to divert the service through Barnsley and scrap the present direct route. South Yorkshire Passenger Transport Executive have today outlined why they think the diversion's a good idea. They say it'd save £400,000 a year and produce an improved, if slightly slower, rail service. But there's opposition to the scheme from people in Penistone itself. They say the service would be less well used, and from the rail unions, who fear the move could hasten the closure of the Trans-Pennine Woodhead freight link, part of which is used by the present Sheffield to Penistone passenger service. Well, our reporter Graham Chatfield asked the PTE's Director of Operations and Planning, Scott Helliwell, whether there'd be a protracted struggle over the proposals.
I think if people concerned really think about the situation, they'll realise that what their reactions are rather unwise. The present service is very expensive and is very poorly used, and the County Council will not support it. That means automatically that the British Railways Board will put it into the closure procedure. That will drag on for some time, no doubt, and questions of hardship will be heard before the Transport Users Consultative Committee. But in the present economic circumstances, it seems fairly likely that the service will go. Therefore, there will not be a local railway service to Penistone. What we're proposing would retain a local railway service to Penistone, which is surely what the people want, since it is a better option and a quicker option than any road-based alternative, because we've looked at these alternatives. The second point is, I think it's unwise to link the Woodhead closure with the local railway service issue. The leader of the County Council has made it perfectly plain that the local service, the present local service, will not be supported, and therefore it doesn't come in to affect the Penistone Woodhead issue at all.
But surely people who are against the freight link being stopped will argue against this local rail service being changed as well, because the effect of that would be to make the closure of the freight link that much easier to go through.
Yes, they can follow that line of reasoning, but the passenger transport executive's job is concerned with local passenger services, not with freight services. And I've said repeatedly that there is no way we're going to support the direct service. And so that decision has already been taken. The freight stands or falls on itself, and that is a matter entirely for the British Railways Board.
If this argument over the closure of the direct rail link between Sheffield and Penistone drags on for ages and ages, as it might very well do, what would be the effect on the proposed diversion through Barnsley?
It's hard to judge, but I would have thought that there's every chance that the county's support, or county's possible support for the diverted service, may not come about, and that they wouldn't be interested in the diverted service at all. Therefore, there'd be no rail link to Penistone.
So you're saying that continued opposition at this stage might kill off any sort of train service for Penistone?
I think that's a very real possibility, yes.
Scott Helliwell there of South Yorkshire Passenger Transport. A new scheme which could save lives and money has been put together by a local group of one of society's most maligned sections, the ton-up motorbike fanatics. These are youngsters normally accused of nothing more public-spirited than causing as much self-inflicted injury as they do noise nuisance. Roger Brooks has been investigating the leather-clad Angels of Mercy.
The sound of a well-tuned motorbike, that may be music to the ears of a Barry Sheen fan, but it's probably absolute anathema to anyone who's not so keen on a throaty roadside roar. But next time you hear one of those machines, if you fall into that second category who don't particularly like the sound, think twice before you complain. It could be that the rider in question is urgently carrying life-saving medical supplies to a needy case from one South Yorkshire hospital to another. That's thanks to the setting up of this area's very first independent volunteer medical dispatch unit, who have 12 bike riders so far, raring, or should I say roaring, to go. And as soon as they can expand that team to give hospitals an assured 24-hour service, they'll be off. And one of the men behind the plan is the one who's just arrived on his own personal pride and joy, 23-year-old Greg Gorst from Denneby, Maine. Now, Greg, what's the basic plan?
Well, hopefully we hope to give cover to the hospitals carrying medical supplies, plasma, drugs, etc., and to save the hospital money and time.
Is there much demand for this kind of service, then?
Well, from what we can gather, yes, there's going to be rather high demand, and that's why we need as many volunteers as we possibly can get.
You say as many as possible. How many?
Well, the more the better, but we're hoping to get at least another 20 volunteers to really offer service.
Now, what sort of qualifications do they have to have? Do they need a real rip-roaring bike and lots of experience, or what?
No, any sort of machine will do. But one thing we do stipulate is a clean driver's licence, whether it be full or provisional.
And presumably with the kind of things you'll carry, that you don't want people who've any connections with drink or drugs?
True, that's it. We don't want any drug or drink offences.
Now, what's been the reaction of the police? Because presumably this kind of service would attract people who, if we can be quite honest, might be tempted to use it to do a bit of speeding.
Well, we've had words with the police over the past, and it was very helpful, and we assured them that no one would be breaking the law, if possible.
So what should anyone who wants to volunteer to help out on this service, when it's initiated, what should they do to get in touch with you?
Ring me on Rotherham 867-000.
And the gentleman in question again, Greg Gorst on Rotherham 867-000.
Well, in case you haven't already realised, tonight's Halloween. Traditionally the spookiest night of the year, when witches and black cats are flying through the sky and magic spells are being cast. Well, whether you believe in magic or not, witchcraft is alive and thriving in Sheffield, as Elaine Lipworth discovered when she spoke to the High Priestess of Sheffield's Witches Coven, Patricia Crowther, who explained what Halloween is all about.
Halloween is one of the oldest festivals of Western Europe. It is one of the great fire festivals, of which there were four, and these were called the Cross Quarter Days, when fires were lit on hilltops and continued right into the following week. Hence the origin of the Guy Fawkes bonfires that we have today. But the bonfire goes back a lot farther than Guy Fawkes Day and his abortive plot.
What is the connection between Bonfire Night and Halloween? They're so close together. Is there any historical connection?
Well, yes, because the calendar was altered some years ago, well, about hundreds of years ago, actually, and 12 days were dropped off it. So in actual fact, the proper date of Halloween is about the 11th of November, and this has been revived mysteriously as Armistice Day. It is still a festival of the dead, when the dead are remembered. The old name of Halloween was Samhain, which means summer's end, and it is the death of the old year, the beginning of the new year, the night when the gates of the other world swing open. All sorts of spirits, in fact, are supposed to be abroad on Halloween. This is why they light the pumpkin in the window, which was to frighten off any evil spirits which might be around.
Now, children tonight will be celebrating by dressing up as witches with black hats and broomsticks and black cats. I notice you've got a black cat, in fact. Well, you're a white witch. How do the genuine white witches celebrate Halloween?
It is a very big religious festival. We celebrate the return of the Horned God. Now, he is the god of death and regeneration, and he reigns for 3 months of the year. Well, we worship him. We worship his return, and we hold prayers. But it's not a miserable affair, because we have laughter in the craft.
As a white witch, you obviously don't practice black magic, but what sort of magic do you practice?
White magic, of course. Positive magic.
Which is what?
For 12 years, we've done practically nothing else but help people.
I think of witches performing evil spells, the really ugly witches from the fairy tales. Now, what have you got to do with the black witches?
Nothing at all. I believe in its purest form, witchcraft was a religion. Of course, I also believe that there are good and bad in all religions.
Well, Sheffield's very own witch, Patricia Crowther. We'll take a short break there. After the break, the sport with Stuart Linnell.
Just before Jobfinder, this is Jim Greensmith with a special message. Today is an historic day in the career of Radio Hallam's news editor, Ian Rufus. It's his last day with the radio station that he helped to start just over 5 years ago. Ian's leaving to open a new station down in Coventry, and as a sign of affection and esteem, his colleagues in the newsroom at Hallam have compiled this tape of some of Ian's more embarrassing moments.
No, the jury in the Italian restaurant.
Right. Tony Curry on why he signed for Leeds United, the National Front.
Can you lower my cans just a bit, Mike, or I shall be dead for life. Yes, certainly. The jury and the Spaghetti House Sieg have now been told that two men not involved in the actual have... much the same, actually.
They're all right for me. I like them like this.
Yeah, you know, he's just deaf as a post. You're... It's funny that. I thought it was coincidence, actually, but, it's, you know... You're not going to chew gum all the way through New Scene, are you?
And finally, there are six independents standing in Chesterfield, two in Barrow Hill, two in Lowgate and Woodthorpe, one at Middlecroft, one in Old Whittington, and one in St Helens Ward, which adds up to seven. Finally, there are six independents standing in Chesterfield, one in Barrow Hill, two in... go on.
I'm in Rufus and in tonight's programme. We hope to be reporting live from the scene a little later in tonight's programme.
Finding a job for you, Job Finder.
Radio Hallam's Job Finder service on air every weekday at 7.45, 10.45, 12.45, around 5.45 and 10.45 p.m. And now here are today's vacancies.
If you're a TV bench engineer technician who studied City and Gills and also colour endorsement, then Telesure Limited would like to meet you. They're offering top rates of pay and conditions to experienced applicants. For an interview, ring Mr. Wilson on Sheffield 381 361. 381 361.
Job prospects dead. Your way ahead could be as a bus driver with South Yorkshire Transport. It takes real skill and aptitude these days, but if you have the right attributes, our training will bring them out. It's a job that gives you quite a lot of freedom as well as security and attractive earnings. Also an opportunity for rapid progression from conductor to a one-man driver. So if you're 19 and over, preferably with a full driving licence, contact Mike Newton on Sheffield 78688 and ask about the benefits of working for South Yorkshire Transport.
Radio Hallam need a first-class secretary capable of working efficiently in a very busy office. Only skilled shorthand typists need apply. In writing, please, to the company secretary, Radio Hallam, P.O. Box 194, Hartshead, Sheffield.
Remember, Job Finder is broadcast five times every weekday.
Job Finder.
And with my carefully nurtured reputation now in complete ruin, over to Stuart Linnell for the sport.
Starting with rugby union, the All Blacks won their third successive match on their tour, beating Edinburgh 14-6 at Merseyside this afternoon. And that result maintained the All Blacks' impressive record north of the border. They've not lost there since 1905. Two tries by Derek Sherlock of Sheffield Tigers saved the day for South Yorkshire in this afternoon's representative match against North Yorkshire at York. South Yorkshire, who eventually ran out winners by 12 points to 9, were trailing 9-0 until 30 minutes into the second half when Sherlock scored his tries. And Sheffield Polytechnic thrashed York University by 78 points to 6 in their match at Norton. There are two Football League Cup fourth round matches tonight, Sunderland against West Ham and West Bromwich Albion against Norwich. Here's Steve Tung.
Cyril Regis, the England under-21 striker, is back for West Brom 2 months after a cartilage operation. He's done well in a couple of reserve games since then and now has to try and tie down a regular first-team place again. John Dean, the fellow striker, signed from Aston Villa, is cup-tied tonight, so Regis will partner Alastair Brown, with Peter Barnes again on the subs bench. After their encouraging run recently, Albion must be confident of beating the rather inconsistent Norwich. Sunderland's home advantage is a real advantage to them. They've dropped only 1 point in 6 league games at Roker, but have not yet won an away match. They lost 2-0 to West Ham at Upton Park when Pop Robson was well shackled by his former teammate Billy Bonds. Tonight, much will depend on the London side's attitude under pressure, which has often let them down in the past.
Well, what Yorkshire went through 12 months ago over the Jeff Boycott sacking, a First Division soccer club is about to experience because of its relative lack of success in recent years. Aston Villa's former chairman Doug Ellis will lose his place on the club's board if he fails in his battle for boardroom power at an extraordinary general meeting of shareholders at Villa Park tomorrow night. The three directors who face being ousted if Ellis is successful have said that they'll press for his removal if he doesn't go of his own accord. Chairman Harry Cartz, major shareholder Ron Kendall and his son Donald are confident of success and will call another extraordinary meeting to oust Ellis if he fails to offer his resignation. If Ellis does gain the control he wants, then the future of manager Ron Saunders seems to be away from Villa Park. Ellis has criticised the recent sale of Andy Gray and other players. Villa are currently 15th in the First Division, having won only 3 of their 12 matches, and they've been linked with Brian Clough as a future manager if Doug Ellis becomes chairman again. And finally, Barnsley are still waiting to hear whether or not Chelsea striker Trevor Ayllott has accepted terms offered to him by the Oakwell club. There should be an answer tomorrow. And so, for the very last time, the closing news headlines from Ian Rufus.
Thank you, Stuart. A 13-year-old boy has been cleared of causing the death of a young Sheffield girl who died when a television set fell on her from the balcony of a skyscraper flat in the Hyde Park complex in Sheffield. The judge ordered the jury to acquit the boy after hearing legal submissions. The security guard sprayed with ammonia in a wager snatch at a Sheffield tool firm this morning has now been released from hospital. Police are still hunting 3 men who got away with £71,000 from Stanley Tools in Woodside Lane. Detectives hunting the Yorkshire Ripper, who so far killed and mutilated 12 women, believe he may have moved south from his hunting ground in Yorkshire and Lancashire. They say they've had phone calls, supposedly from the Ripper, to people in Kettering in Northamptonshire, which they're treating as genuine. And mystery still surrounds the crash of a DC-10 jet, which careered into aircraft buildings at Mexico City in thick fog. At least 80 people are believed to have died, and while survivors say there were flames aboard the aircraft before it landed, witnesses on the ground say trouble developed after it had touched down. The weather? A dry evening is expected with clear periods, and the outlook for tomorrow dry and bright at first, with showers developing later. Well, that's New Scene for tonight, and from me for good, as I'm off to Pastures New Studio Production, Sean Ferguson. We'll be back, or Jim Greensmith will be back, with another edition of New Scene, 5:30 tomorrow night.